Good morning. It's already been very good to be here this morning, has it not? I heard, and I stole this from someone else. I heard this, so it really worked for me. It may not for you. Okay, it may not be true for you. But I want everybody, okay, kids and all, listen up for a second, okay? I'm going to give you kids an assignment here in just a minute. But all you children, look at me. Okay, yes, you have to. Now, everyone, close your eyes, and I want you to imagine what Jesus looked like, what Jesus of Nazareth looked like. What comes into your mind when you picture Jesus of Nazareth, okay? I mean, like, you know, 2,000 years ago, when Jesus was physically walking the earth, what did he look like, okay? It didn't look like the pictures that we've all seen, you know, growing up. He was basically an Arab, right? He's Middle Eastern. He had, you know, darker skin than most of us in here. And probably coarse, very thick, black hair, right? Picture Jesus of Nazareth. Do you have a clear image in your mind of what Jesus looked like to you? Okay, now you can open your eyes. What look was on his face? What was his expression? Huh? Thank you, Jovi. Solemn. Huh? Peaceful, right? Solemn, peaceful. That's what most people think of, the kind of this solemn look, right? Right. How many of you picture Jesus smiling? Awesome. You know, look back. Almost everyone who had their hands up just now, except for two hands, were the kids. I want you to think about something about Jesus, though. Hebrews 1 says, and this is a framing of Psalm 45 in reference to Jesus. But to the Son, he says, "Your throne, O God, endures forever and ever. You rule with the scepter of justice. You love justice and hate evil. Therefore, God, your God, has anointed you, pouring out the oil of joy on you more than on anyone else." It says God made Jesus happier than anyone else in existence. Right? The way it's saying is Jesus was the happiest person alive, the most joyful person in existence. Right? So kids, okay, y'all look at me again. I want you to draw a couple things, okay? You've got paper. There's paper over there. As I'm talking today, you can be listening, of course. I want you to draw something that makes you joyful, all right? Good job. Okay, and if you get done, yeah, that's very scary, but that's fine. You can put your papers over there. Keep drawing multiple things. If you want to get a grown-up to help you label it, right? Or maybe draw a picture of a smiling Jesus, okay? But draw things that make you happy and maybe draw a picture of smiling Jesus, okay? Now, for you adults that are in here, I like having these kids in. Jesus said, you know, suffer the little children, let them come unto me, but don't trust them together in large groups, right? So, if you are a parent walking in here, then you're still a parent for the next couple hours, okay? So let's just, you're adults, right? And as I'm talking, if you're interested in what I say, there's a lot of onus on me to make it interesting and keep your attention. No, don't get me wrong. But if you're distracted from what I'm saying by a child, do you know whose fault that is? Thank you. Okay? So I challenge you. All right, I challenge you. Okay, let's think about joy. Okay, we'll think about it from a practical level today. And we've talked about it lots of times here, and we've talked about the last few weeks. We've talked about some of these situations and these the way that sin has wrought the world that we live in that has made peace and love and joy seem very difficult things to attain, right? But I think what God is calling us towards in this new year in our lives of following Jesus is that love and peace and joy. And I'll think specifically about joy today. And first of all, I need to backtrack and walk back some of the things I've said in here before. I think about how many, I've said it and other people have said it, that there's a difference between joy and happiness, right? There's a difference between being joyful and being happy, right? And we almost talk about happiness as something that's almost a negative, right? That joy, that happiness has to do with your circumstances, and it's this fleeting, you know, momentary thing. But joy is in this enduring state that no matter what is going on around you, you can be joyful even when you're sad, right? And that's true to an extent, but when we actually look at the words and we look at how they're used, that's really semantics, and that's really not borne out in the Bible, right? We all have a sense of what being happy means, and being joyful is the exact same thing. It's this state of well-being, this pervasive state of knowing that all is well, that things are well. But if you look in the Bible, how many times do you think happiness is used in the New Testament? A lot. Y'all are participating. That's awesome. It depends. What'd you say, Jeff?
Depends on your translation.
Exactly. Thank you for that. In the NIV, how many happiness? The word happy comes up 4 times, right? In the KJV, the word happy comes up like 80 times. Okay, and so the words that you can that the translators of, the Greek into the English, the words that they translate as happy or joyful or joyous or glad, they're all forms of kariate or whatever, some, Greek word. I don't know Greek, but it's the same idea, okay? And so as when I finally got to the point where I realized that being happy is okay. That's something God wants for us. This deep sort of, state of well-being. That's what God wants for us. And you really start to pay attention to, like, science. There's been a lot of work, of course, on... If you look up articles with neuroscience and joy, there are very few. But if you look up articles with neuroscience and happiness, there's billions of them. It's something that people have looked into, and because it's a huge part of the human question, is how do you be happy? How do you be joyful? Now, a problem is, and I think that kind of the things that I've said and some other people in here have said before of happiness versus joy, I think what we've really confused is pleasure with happiness and joy. Okay, happiness and joy, when I'm talking about this, are the same things, basically the same things. But pleasure is something that is completely different. It's a different idea, right? And from a biological perspective, the feelings of pleasurable, the pleasurable feelings are basically are at the rooted in their association with our dopamine functions, right? And dopamine is a chemical that your brain produces. It's mainly in the limbic system of your brain, the amygdala of your brain. Dopamine is this hit you get of pleasure when you, it's for a reward, right? When you accomplish something, or when you finish something, or when you're anticipating something that's going to feel good, or that's going to be pleasurable, or will bring a sense of accomplishment, you get the hit of dopamine. It's, it's a chemical that makes you feel good. And these chemicals are associated with a substance, eating a candy bar, or, smoking crack, or whatever. I mean, not joking. That's why people do drugs. Right? Of all sorts. Right? Or with an experience. When you go on a trip, you go on this vacation, you go on spring break, and you go and just throw, all your inhibitions out the window and just whatever. When you just go on a vacation, this new experience, this novelty is hugely associated with this, right? That's dopamine. When something's new and novel, it's this dopamine, this feeling of pleasure, right? And also it has to do with the difference between the experience and expectations. And also it was related to novelty. How does it feel when you find $5 laying on the ground? Right? Worry. Carol, you can be quiet now. Anyone else? Anyone else? How does it feel when you find $5 cash laying on the ground, Manuel? It feels dope. Yeah, all right, $5. I mean, you get this little thrill, right? I found $100 bill in the floor of a gas station one time. And I'm not going to go into that whole story because I tried to do this right, very noble thing, and it just went badly. But anyway, when you find $5 or $20 or $100 laying on the ground, how would that feel? Yeah. How does it feel on every other Friday when you get your direct deposit? Do you get that same thrill? Huh? No. Why? Because that's expected. You know that's going to happen. You pretty much know exactly how much that's going to be. The only time you have any emotion associated with that when something's screwed up and there's not enough in there, right? And so the difference between expectations and your experience also is related to this dopamine process, this feeling of pleasure, right? And pleasure is the idea, you know, this feels good, I want more, right? Whatever it is, you know, this Snickers is great, I want another one. These chips are awesome, I want two more bags, right? Or this, you know, whatever this experience or whatever this substance is, you know, the pleasure, you know, dopamine and this pleasure, idea of pleasures, this feels good, I want more. What happens when you get too much, though? There's too much dopamine or too much of that experience. You chase after this too much. Is it healthy? No, it is very, very unhealthy. You know, it's unhealthy from all perspectives down to the biological perspective, right? That, you know, going after these dopamine hits rewires your body and it reduces the effect of dopamine. So you need more, and you train yourself to only get it from this substance or this experience, right? And everything else is modulated downward. It leads to addiction, and it's self-destructive, right? If you want to think about, to me, if you think about how our world is, how our region is, how Smith County is, and the state that so many people are in, and the brokenness and the destructiveness and the self-destruction around us, if you want to know why, just think about how our brains work and how they work with pleasure, right? Now, on the other hand, happiness and joy, like I said, is completely different. Okay, it's not rooted in dopamine. It's the feeling of well-being I'm talking about. Not, man, that feels good, I want more. That's dopamine. That's pleasure. The feeling of well-being, that I'm okay, that everything around me is okay, and I'm happy, I'm joyful. This feeling of well-being, this is rooted in mainly in serotonin, right? And serotonin, is the production of that is related to your prefrontal cortex part of your brain. We'll get into this a little more later, okay? But that's the feeling of well-being, and it's related to your character and to how things generally are inside you and around you, right? And related to your character. And happiness and joy, this feels good, but it's not driving you to more and more. It's, I've got enough. This is enough. Everything's okay. And there's no such thing as too much, right? So I'm going to use the words happiness and joy interchangeably, but don't conflate that like our society does with pleasure. Okay? And do you want to know how to be happy? I have a formula. Actually, I don't have a formula. Science has a formula. Okay? Yes, this is the formula for happiness. No joke. Okay? There was huge international studies done, and the researchers come up with this formula that it would explain how happy someone is, okay? Where H is your level of enduring happiness, right? Not your momentary level of happiness when you feel good when something nice, when something good happens, right? But just overall mood state of your life over long term, right? This well-being, all right, over the long term equals S is your set point, your biological set point or your set range. A huge part of what gives us this enduring mood state of well-being, and you guys think about this, it's not going to make sense, but when you think about it, it does, it's genetics. Right? Being happy and being joyful is a lot harder for some people than it is for others. Right? And it's just simply, I mean, it's the way... has to do with how your brain formed, has to do with genetics of how it developed, has the environment that it developed in. And it's just your set point. In other words, that can't be changed. And I think if you think about the people you know, you realize it's true. And it's important to know that for yourself. Right? So one of the first factors in this equation is just your set point. That's what you're, well, it's out of your control. It's biology. It's genetics, right? Okay. Another factor is C stands here for the circumstances in your life. The things that are going on around you and how your life generally is, right? The circumstances in your life. Now, what kind of circumstances were they talking about? Okay. Let's think here first. These are the ones, I think these are the four that they said in this research were the biggest ones. They had the most effect in your circumstances. One is whether you lived in a dictatorship, an oppressive dictatorship, versus a democracy or another society with a degree of personal freedom. Okay, this was a major factor. It was one of the major circumstances that determined how much H someone was. Okay? Another factor was whether you were married or not. All right? And I don't know whether... I don't know. This they said was a major factor, but they didn't know whether it was causative. In other words, it's unclear whether being married made you happy or whether if you were happy, you were more likely to be married at any given time, right? So they don't know whether it's causative. Another one, and this is what comes up when you Google friends, right, is a strong social network. Right, it's one of these factors, the circumstances of your life that have a big effect on how happy you are, how much joy you experience. And the other is religion, whether you're engaged in spirituality was a major defining factor. Robust was the word they used, robust factor. These are four robust factors in determining how the circumstances of someone's life relates to how much happiness they experienced, right? And other one, and the other one. So H equals S plus C, the set point, biological set point, the circumstances in your life. And the last one is the voluntary factors under your voluntary control, or the things you choose, right? The choices you make, right? Both emotionally and in your head, in your thought life, and your actions with your body in the world. Okay, these are the things that add up to make you happy. Now, do you think all three of these, S, C, and V, share this equal share equal portions and adding up to H? Huh? No. No, absolutely not. Okay. Now, which of these do you think is the least important? There's where you say something. Huh? You got one for set point. Anybody else? Another one for set point. Another one for set point. Another one? Okay. Okay, so it's unanimous for set point, all right? Now, I'll tell you what the researchers said. Go ahead, Alan.
I was going to say this for people in this room, but I don't know from what's,
right.
Secular range of
happiness. Yeah, and this is purely secular, right? Okay, yeah.
Probably V.
Huh? Probably V? Okay. All right, cool. Huh? According to the researchers. Okay, now, after they put this study out, she said this researcher proposed a ratio between these three. Okay, and after since then, that's been almost 20 years ago, there's been all sorts of research and all sorts of people arguing about two of them and the ratio that these two of them share. But it is universally agreed by people who study other people and look at their lives, the sociology and psychology and neuroscience, people who study the brain, right? The least important one of these is universally agreed, your circumstances are add up to, they make up 10% of the equation. Can you think of anyone else who might have said something who make us should not be surprised with that? Because if other people like Jesus and Paul said lots of things to make us think that that was the case. All right? And to back up to what these things were, you know what even the researchers said? They said these things matter, right? Whether you live in a oppressive regime, a dictatorship, or whether you're married, whether you have a good social network, and whether you're engaged spiritually. What they said didn't matter, had no correlation, had no effect on it, how much money you had, how healthy you were, what race you were, what kind of climate you lived in. Right? And so the whole idea, the American idea that, number one, you got to be white, then you got to get lots of money so you can retire somewhere warm. That has nothing to do with well-being. That can't bring about joy. That can't bring about happiness. Happiness doesn't work that way. Right? And I would argue with this researcher that three of these things that they call circumstances in our lives, that three of these things are voluntary. Right? Whether or not you're married or whether you have a good social network or whether you're engaged spiritually, that's not circumstances that surround you. Those are things you can also choose. So, S, C, and V, 10% of your 10% of this equation are your circumstances. There's arguments of how much the other 90%, how much it falls, about half and half between the other two, right? So, you can look at this, the people whose S, your set point is low. You can look at this and say, oh man, we're just totally screwed. But you can also look at this, what a tremendous amount of power and agency that you have for your own joy. Yeah. And the Bible tells us that. Because how does it treat joy? All right, look at this in Philippians chapter 4. This the joyful book, and this is something we've been looking at. We're going to look at this same passage for I don't know how many times in a row right now, but look at it last week. Philippians chapter 4, verse 4. This is kind of coming at the end where Paul is, Paul's letters all have theology, and then he gets to the point. He says, "This and therefore, because of this, because of X, Y." And the Y is always things that you do with your life. You be this kind of person. You act this way. Therefore, starts out Philippians 4, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Rejoice here, a good way of translating is celebrate. But rejoice, this is simply the verb form of that kariote word. Simply the verb form of joy. It literally means to joy, right? Or to be happy. And so this translator says, be full of joy always because you belong to the Lord. Again, I say, be full of joy. The New Testament treats joy as a commandment. The New Testament treats happiness as a command. Think about that. The New Testament tells us to be happy, to experience well-being, right? To work towards this, right? Only 10% of it has to do with whatever's swirling on around you. A huge part of the rest of it are your choices. So our happiness, our feeling of well-being, our mental and emotional health, it's a moral imperative. It's a moral question. It's a matter of sacredness. Okay? Now, I don't want that to seem heavy or guilt-laden, right? I want you to think about it from the other perspective of what good news it is that this huge part of following Jesus means learning how to be happy. Of how to be joyful. regardless of what's going on around you. Following Jesus isn't learning Bible trivia, right? Being Christ-like isn't being this dour guy who's, you know, just waiting around, you know, judging everybody in the world, waiting to go to heaven when they die, or waiting for Jesus to come back on the clouds. A huge part of following Jesus is joy. Right? And it only makes sense. It only makes sense. What's the most important thing that you want your kids to learn? And the most important thing you want for your kids as they grow up? You know, what's your deepest desire for your children? Thank you. Yes. I remember my parents, you know, it was some time ago. I don't remember what little crisis it was or whatever. But it's been a handful of years ago. And my dad said, you know, all we've ever done, we've only always just wanted for you guys to be happy. Talking about his kids. Yeah. Yes, when I lost my job the most recent time. He said, you know, that's all we've ever desired for you guys. We just, you know, his children, for y'all to be happy. And that is, that's what we want for our children. We want our children to be happy. And so therefore, what's the most important thing you can teach your kids? How to be happy. Yes, how to know God. Of course, that's a prerequisite, right? No, that goes without saying, right? We're not in a secular situation. The most important thing for Christians to teach their children. What's the most important life skill for your kids? To know how to be happy. Right? It's not, the most important life skill for your kids is not how to get a good job so you can make lots of money. If the deepest goal for your child is for that child to be joyful and happy and have a sense of well-being, because getting rich, having a good job is not going to change that at all. Making perfect grades in school, whatever metric of success you want to define, that is not going to make your child more or less likely to be happy in the future. Period. Right? But now Paul's getting ready to lay some stuff on us here, thankfully. That does make a difference. Okay? And the really cool thing that I've been looking at the past few weeks is that I love it when you have these, you know, secular scientists and you have people come to these conclusions and it sounds so novel. They talk about the functional MRIs and what activities in the brain and all this stuff, and they come to all these huge conclusions that sound so novel. And I'm like, number one, it's common sense. Wise people have been saying the same thing forever. And number two, Jesus and Paul said almost the exact same things 2 millennia ago. It's really cool how this is working out. Okay, let's just get into this. First of all, let me just read this text. This is going to be, this should have taken like 5 minutes to get here, sorry. Philippians 4, again, this command, be full of joy. What a command. God could have asked anything of us. He's God, that's His prerogative. He could have asked anything of us. And what does He start out with here? Be full of joy. Be happy. Because you belong to the Lord. Again, I say, be full of joy. Let everyone see that you are considerate in all you do. Remember, the Lord is coming soon. So don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank Him for all He has done. Then you will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ Jesus. And now, dear brothers and sisters, one final thing. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Keep putting into practice all you learned and received from me, everything you heard from me and saw me doing. Then the God of peace will be with you. So these like I said, we're going to spend some time with this text here, and I see three major things in it. Before I get to what those major things are, and I've said this before, but I'm still getting these looks, right? When I said, God wants you to be happy, you are commanded to be happy, some of you are like, oh, man. Right? Thank you for that, Asher. Why? When I give you this command, be happy, why are you, some of you are like, mm. Or your knitted brow, you're worried. Why? Because you don't have time. Have you tried before and it didn't work? You have trouble with it. Thank you. Right. There you go. Because it's hard. And it is much, much harder for some people than it is for others. Right? Some people might feel guilty because you're unhappy, and that gives you this, we'll talk about spirals later, right? But here's the thing. With the life of, this is true across the board with following Jesus. Okay? It's not a matter of trying. It's a matter of training. Okay, what's the difference between trying and training? Okay, how many people here, I said, I will give you $1 million if you go out right now and you run a marathon without stopping? Huh? Well, should not leave you alone. Huh? You could? Yeah, right. Now, LU might. LU's been running, right? Well, for us, no matter what kind of motivation you have, going out running a marathon without stopping, right? It's not a matter of motivation. And no matter how motivated you are, most of us in here, me included, more than likely you included. LU says he could, he probably can. You got to power through the pain, huh? It's not motivation. Yeah. Yeah, well, you've run, okay? If you wanted to run a marathon, though, what would you do? Huh? You start small. What else do you do? You train. You practice. You train your body. You develop your body until you can do that. Then you know you can. Right? It's not a matter of trying harder. Because that doesn't work. Let me know. I may tell you all my life. With following Jesus, trying harder alone doesn't work. It's a matter of training. With God. God wants to do this with us. Right? So, and this commandment to be joyful, this commandment to be happy, it's not about just deciding that you're going to be happy. Does that work?
It's a helpful start.
It's a helpful start. But is that enough? Is that sufficient? You can, you know, I could attempt to have this really powerful sermon this morning. And to really make you feel a certain way. And to really make you commit to being happy this week. I could lay out all the reasons why happiness is good and unhappiness is bad. And you could decide, yes, I'm going to be happy this week. But then you walk out the door and you wake up tomorrow morning. Then what happens? Right? Yeah, all sorts of other stuff. Life. So, following Jesus. And being joyful, being happy is not just a matter of trying. It's a matter of training. Okay? Paul in this passage we just read, I think gives us three things, three skills, right? That we can train in. Lead us closer to God, you know, closer to the people that God called us to be, and make us more joyful. Number one is to surrender the illusion of control. You are not in control of almost anything. And you are not responsible for outcomes in life. Right? You are not in control of things. And you are not responsible for making things happen. How your life turns out is not on your shoulders. How this world turns out is not on your shoulders. How your children turn out is not under your control. And we got to surrender this illusion that we are in control of everything, that we need to be in control of everything going on around us. Another one is practicing gratitude. Okay, but I want to start backwards and start with the last one today. Discipline your thinking. Okay, what does he say here at the end? Be full of joy always because you belong to the Lord. Again, I say be full of joy. He says, and now, dear brothers and sisters, one final thing. I'm leaving with you with this. This is really important. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. And again, I mentioned this, you know, explicitly before, this idea explicitly over the past few weeks, but this is really, really, really important. Okay? At a lot of levels, this is the heart of following Jesus. In terms of the practicality of becoming a disciple of Christ, this is one of the cornerstones. Okay, of how that practically happens. Okay? Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. Okay, now let's flip our biology hats back on again, okay? The emotions that you feel, right? When anything happens or just randomly, for whatever reasons, the things you feel, the emotions that you feel, and also that would include pleasure, right? Whatever these emotions are, and anxiety and worry and anger, so many of these things, these are basically rooted in the limbic system, right? Of which the amygdala is part, okay? So you feel with this part of your brain, right? This front part of your brain called the prefrontal cortex. This is your cognitive thought, right? This is what you think with, okay? Now, serotonin is related to all these. But serotonin, this feeling of well-being, this is related to your prefrontal cortex, what you think with. Okay? It's important to... So you feel, basically you feel back here, down here, and you think up here, right? Okay? Now, it's not quite that simple, because these are all like these feedback loops, and there's dynamic equilibrium between all these processes, between thinking and feeling, and then the process of acting and habits, right? But there's feedback between all these. It's not quite that simple, but it's basically that simple. Okay. What Paul is saying here is you have control over what you think about. Right? He's saying exercising that control is part of what it means to follow Jesus. And he says it in different words and in lots of different places. And it's also related to being joyful. Right? Now, take out the following Jesus part, and that's exactly what neuroscience tells us. Okay? One of the neuroscientists that I listened to about it said, your emotions and these thoughts that pop up, they're like ants. You ever noticed how ants can just appear out of nowhere to random places? No matter how clean your house is, you just, all of a sudden you can have ants. Especially when you have kids, right? He says, and thoughts that pop into your mind or these emotions that you feel are like ants. They just appear from out of nowhere. You have no control over them. And that's how your limbic system works, right? How your feeling system works. It's random, and it's, you know, you don't have direct control over it. It's involuntary. You don't have direct control over how you feel at any given moment, okay? But he said, this neuroscientist said, and of course he had this little comparison to brain surgery, you know, self-brain surgery. He said, you have to get each one of these thoughts, is you have to give it a biopsy, right? So you have to take this thought, you have to take this emotion, and you have to pull it, and you have to look at it. You have to consider it. You have to think about it. To pull it. And right now I'm feeling frustrated. I'm feeling frustrated because of this. It feels this way to be frustrated. This frustrated is lying in this. But if I think about this frustration, I realize it's not that big a deal, and it's probably going to be okay if I don't lash out. And by the time you're done thinking about it, give this thought, this biopsy, this thinking about it, seeing what it's composed of and where it came from and how it's working. By thinking about it, by examining it, you're exerting control over it. And it's biological. Because what are you doing? If you take this thing that you're feeling from here, right? And you start to think about it with which part of your brain? The blue part? Right? You are re-exerting the primacy of your cognitive thoughts and your prefrontal cortex over the limbic system, over what you feel, over these ants, over these random things that pop up. So you're creating a feedback loop in your brain. You are rewiring your brain. It literally, biologically works that way. So what did Paul say? He said something that took 2,000 years for the scientists to say. He said, think about your thoughts. Think about what you're dwelling upon. You know, use, and the thing about doing all this is, we'll get to that point in a minute. Sorry, I'm getting out of order here. To think about your thoughts, dwell upon these things. You have this emotion that pops up in you from some random place. You know, the other night, I've got to go take a drug test sometime. You know, just you have to do it so often for one of these companies that I do work for, right? And I sent this email back about it, and I was getting ready to get in the shower, and this thought popped into my mind. Now, what if they get a wrong result, and I fail that drug test? And so I started thinking, man, well, what recourse would I have? They wouldn't believe me. I couldn't get another test because then, you know, they would just say there's so much time has elapsed between your first one and your second one. They would never believe you. Somebody could make a mistake at this lab and I could not be able to work for this company anymore and I'd have zero recourse, right? See what I'm saying? You guys see how logical that is? Yeah. Right. Then I thought, man, you see what happened? This ant popped up. This silly, stupid little ant, right? And I literally caught myself saying that. I caught myself that, man, how ridiculous is it? What is the likelihood of that happening? Who do I know that that's ever happened to? Other than the poppy seeds, you know, on Seinfeld, right? And you know how much I thought about that afterwards? Zero. So what happened in my brain as that was going on? You know, I was feeling anxiety. Feeling anxiety thinking about, you know, falsely failing a drug test due to someone else's error and the course of my life changing because of that. You know, you actually feel anxiety. I actually felt anxious. But as soon as you stop, and you, like that guy said, it's kind of cheesy, but you biopsy that thought. You examine that ant and you think about it. You are re-exerting your cognitive thought, your prefrontal cortex, over this out-of-control racing limbic system, right? And it's really important for us to discipline our thoughts and to choose what we think about and what we dwell on and to examine our emotions. It's really important because if we just consume whatever comes by in this world that we live in, what kind of thoughts are we going to have? Yeah, black, thank you. N.T. Wright said it this way. The command in verse 8, to think about all the wonderful and lovely things listed here, runs directly opposite to the habits of mind instilled by the modern media. Read the newspapers. Their stock and trade is anything that is untrue, unholy, unjust, impure, ugly, of ill repute, vicious, and blameworthy. It is a great sentence. And think about it. He's dated himself here. This book was written 2002, right? So 2 years before Facebook. Okay? And so this is this times 50 now, right? Read the newspapers. Their stock and trade is anything that is untrue, unholy, unjust, impure, ugly, of ill repute, vicious, and blameworthy. Is that a true representation of God's good and beautiful world? You are never going to celebrate the goodness of the Creator if you feed your mind only on the places in the world which humans have made ugly. Because why do the newspapers have untrue, unholy, have things of ill repute, vicious, and blameworthy? And why is the media negative? They're money motivated, okay? What does that have to do with being negative and saying horrible things and putting out bad news?
Well, it kind of stimulates your brain.
Yeah.
Because it's like anger or fear.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, for sure. Okay. Okay, there's different levels. I can see that, Jeff. Yeah. But one level, I think the biggest level is. If you go throughout your day, you have conversations with 10 different people. If one of those people says something nasty about you, negative to you, when you get home in the evening and you're thinking about your day, which one comes in your mind? The negative thing, the negative thought. Why is that? All this brain research tells you that negative thoughts, right, and bad news, negative things, imprint in your brain at least 5 times the rate of something positive. In other words, something positive would have to happen to you, that exact same really positive thing would have to happen to you 5 times before it imprints itself in your brain as much as one negative thing does. Right? Bad, you know, they're in the business of selling, and they're selling bad news because bad news sells. Right? It's what we remember. It's what stimulates our brain, like he says, and it imprints on ourselves. But why is that? Why do we remember the bad things more than the good things? And this is not something that is something that you can train yourself out of. But it's not, if this is true for you, it's not that something's wrong with you. This is how people work. Think about it. Why is that? What possible advantage could it be for you to remember something bad more strongly than you remember something good?
Survival.
Because your brain doesn't want you to touch the hot stove eye twice. Right? So the media is playing on our brains at the basest, but evolutionary level. Right? Our enemy is incredibly smart. Right? And so we have to realize that all of these, that we got a choice of whether we're going to focus on the negative. All right, or whether we're going to be more aggressively at 5 times the rate at focusing on the things that are good, at examining our thoughts, examining our emotions as they come up, right? So N.T. Wright says, instead, fill your mind with all the things that God has given us to be legitimately pleased with and enjoy. And so what I'm driving at here, what Paul was driving at, is not that happiness and joy is not avoiding negative emotions. Because if we go through life with the goal of avoiding negative emotions, right, then we'll never get anywhere close to growth or to a goal of doing anything with our lives. You know, this with a philosophy of avoiding feeling anxiety, or avoiding feeling pain, or avoiding feeling loss, or avoiding feeling hurt. If we go through life trying to avoid that, then we end up cutting ourselves off from anything real and lasting and beautiful in the world. Right? We have to be able to experience these negative emotions. Right? And sit with them where they are. Yeah, this stinks. This is not cool. And, you know, I'm feeling sad because of this. And looking at all these things, yeah, that thing just stinks. And ask yourself, is there any lessons that this can teach me as I move forward in the future? And you know what we do with it? We put it away. And we move on. Because if we keep examining this and we keep letting this emotion, we keep letting the limbic system drive our lives, which it was never meant to do. Your emotions were never meant. It's a completely different part of your brain. It's not. We weren't meant to live based on our emotions. Our choices weren't meant to be made based on how what we're feeling at any given time. Right? But if instead we can learn how to sit with these emotions as we experience them, evaluate them for what they are, for their reality, and then choose something else, that's the beginning of the pathway to joy. All right? And the good news is, okay, what can you tell me about this picture? Give me some data about this picture. Huh? Getting off the interstate. This is in the slow lane. What else can you tell me?
It looks like Interstate 81.
It does look like Interstate 81. You're right, Chase. What else can you tell me? Huh? One's more busy than the other. You got some people merge. What else? There's signs telling me. What can you tell me about, I don't know, whatever that is. Something's open late. All right? What else can you tell me? Can anybody tell me what species of plants there are in this picture?
Grass.
Huh? There's grass. Not a species. Huh? There's trees. Can you give me a species? Anybody?
Maybe the kudzu?
Oh, there probably. Redbud. Okay. What else? What else can you tell me about this picture? There's sky. What's the weather like, Chase?
Cloudy.
Yeah, cloudy.
Near a city.
Huh?
Near a city.
Near a city? What makes you say that?
Big buildings.
Where at? Oh, holy crap, I didn't see that. Yeah. Right? Right. If you were, what's this? There's so much information available to our senses all the time. Your brains, your senses are assimilating an unbelievable amount of information all the time. Right? It's overwhelming. You know, if you were, when you were 16 years old, how would it feel if you were driving right here?
Scary.
Overwhelming, right? Now, what does it feel like when you're driving right here? No big deal, right? Because your brain, your senses, all this information, we didn't even scratch the surface of it. Your brain is a filter. Okay? Your brain filters out what is salient, creates salience pathways. Okay? Your brain filters out what you need to know. And that's what your attention is drawn to. Like I said, you're driving here, you could be listening to a book, listening to music, you could be just, you know, watching the birds, driving down, no big deal. But what happens when the brake lights on that car in front of you flash? Oh, tense up, get ready to stop, you're alert. What happens when in the rearview mirror you see blue lights? Huh?
It's not me, right?
Yeah. Right? Because over the years, and through your training, you have built salience pathways in your driving that you know, that your brain knows. Your brain is this filter, and it knows what your prefrontal cortex, what your cognitive thoughts, what need to be brought to their attention. Right? Your brain, this filter in your brain knows. Blue lights, Dude needs to know. Right? What's the first thing you do when you see blue lights? Yeah, slow down. Yeah. Go fast. I was going to think glance at the speedometer, but yeah, okay. All right. You panic. Okay. So therefore, the more ants that you pick up and examine, and then you put back in the limbic system, right? The more times you have this emotion, this random thought, that you pick it up and you examine it, and you use your cognitive thoughts and your prefrontal cortex to examine this emotion or examine this thought, and you put that away, your brain literally constructs itself. It builds synapses. Right? Builds these salience pathways based on what you do. So the more ants you examine, the more thought biopsies you make. You are literally teaching your brain. You are literally training your brain in what you want to think about and how you want to feel. And so science tells us that literally we are building our brains towards joy or in the opposite direction. Right? And it's not that you have immediate control over what you think about, right? If you're really, 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 really thirsty, Manuel, and I pull out this little bitty cup with about that much water in it, what are you going to think? Not enough. This guy's a jerk. Why is he giving me this little bit of water? I'm really thirsty. But are you going to say that? No. What are you going to do? Huh? Yeah. You're going to say, immediately you'll say, that's not enough water. But you could. If your brain was well trained enough. Right? If you had constructed the right kind of brain, if God with you, in cooperation with you, had constructed the right kind of brain, you could say, instead, choose to frame it, reframe it in a positive light. Man, I was really, really thirsty. This isn't a ton of water, but it's better than nothing. You know, I'm glad this guy, he must not have had much water, but I'm glad he shared that little bit with me. This is a little bit of water, but man, it's going to feel good on my dry throat. Right? Because as our brains are continually, and the whole idea that you might probably heard when you were kids in biology class, by the time you reached adulthood, your brain was stopped developing, right? That's nonsense. All right, that is total nonsense. Okay? It's been just completely disproved, that notion. Okay? As you start thinking about our, you know, mood states and moving towards joy or moving toward what's the opposite of joy in this respect, in this psychological, neuroscientific respect, what's the opposite of joy or happiness? Yeah, depression, the fear, right? So what goes as we train our brains, either on purpose by selecting to reframe these thoughts and these emotions in the good, or whether we just go with the flow with the world around us and we're continually consuming more and more of the negative, and we're continuing to accentuate the negative, we're continuing to give validity to all these random negative emotions that come up within us. That is also doing the same thing. It's also wiring your brain. It's also creating salience pathways in your brain. The more negative things that you dwell on, the more your brain thinks, hey, this filter of your brain, the more it thinks, hey, this guy really needs to know the negative stuff. He really needs to feel the negative stuff, right? And it's what's this big? I love this picture. It's so comically large. What's this here? A flywheel. Okay, Alan is a a magician. I don't know why I almost said that. An engineer. What's a flywheel, Alan?
I guess it basically, once it starts to move, it continues the momentum. Mm-hmm. The momentum of the engine to continue its action.
Right. So once you get this flywheel, it's a comically large flywheel. I love what the guy's wearing, too. This guy's awesome. But once you start a flywheel, it's huge, big in diameter, and it uses the momentum. Once you get it started, you know, that first initially getting started is hard, but once it's moving, it uses the momentum, right, to reduce the amount of inputs that it takes to keep it going, right? It's really hard to turn this massive wheel, as you can imagine. But once it's turning, you just barely have to touch it, right? And these spirals, both towards joy and happiness, and towards, you know, depression. I'm not going to speak a lot about it. I don't feel qualified. But towards the negative side of us, they're both flywheels. You know, one neuroscientist I was reading, you know, said it was spirals. So you have an upward spiral in your life when you're rewiring your brain and you're doing these other practices. And the things that neuroscientists tell you to do is exactly what the Bible tells us to do. Okay, we'll get into it more. But it's this spiral upward towards joy. You know, it's there. You have momentum. It's like this flywheel. And it's not this direct path. You're never going to feel any negative emotions or nothing bad's ever going to happen. But it's just a continual spiral. You know, you have momentum, right? You have momentum. First Corinthians 9 says, don't you realize that in a race, everyone runs, but only one person gets the prize? So run to win. All athletes are disciplined in their training. Disciplined in their training. They do it to win a prize that will fade away. But we do it for an eternal prize. Because any athlete, another way to translate it, any athlete enters a strict discipline of training. Right? Following Jesus. And Paul's talking about following Jesus here in this language. It says it takes training. It takes practice. It takes effort. With God. So they do it. These athletes do it to win a prize that will fade away, but we do it for an eternal prize. So I run with purpose in every step, not just shadow boxing. I discipline my body like an athlete, training it to do what it should. Otherwise, I fear that after preaching to others, I myself might be disqualified. Yeah, the idea of training our minds, why I say this makes sense, that neuroscience is telling us this? If this is the way that the Bible tells us to live, the Bible emphasizes disciplining your thoughts, it makes perfect sense that neuroscience all of a sudden tells us, once they get enough technology and enough research, they tell us how important disciplining your thoughts is. This is how we were wired to live. Right? And so we enter into a life of training. Your whole life. It's incredibly important to take these sorts of things seriously. To think about the pursuit, not just the pursuit of happiness, but the pursuit of joy, of emotional and mental well-being is incredibly important. Number one, because what if that was what Christians were known for? What if followers of Jesus were known for being the most joyful, happy, healthy, well-balanced people in the world? What if? Right? What if? And it's also really important to think about these things because we all have a responsibility. Like I said, this is a moral question. Right? And you have responsibility and agency in this for yourself. And we help bear each other's burdens, and we're there to lean upon, and we're there to spur one another on to these good works. We're there for each other. But you have a huge amount of responsibility for yourself to take this seriously. Right? I've known a lot of you in here for a very long time. Right? Only a lot of you in here, been very close to a lot of you for 20 years. Right? I've known an even bigger proportion of you in here and been close to you for a decade. Right? And you think about the people in this room, you think about the people in your life that you know well. And you know that some people, throughout that period, everyone changes. Right? Life circumstances change. You get a kid. You know, your job changes, you start doing something different with your life, you get married, or you get divorced, or you retire, whatever the case may be. Everyone throughout that period, everybody changes, right? And you can think about the people you know. Some of the people you know, some of the people in this room are in the question of joy and emotional health are doing great. And some of the people you know, some of the people in your life, if you think about it, some of the people in this room, I worry about. Right? We have to, as the people of God, take this amazing opportunity to follow Him into a life of love and peace and joy. Joy is the invitation. Joy, we have to take it seriously. We have to take advantage of it. And like I said, for some people, it's going to be far easier than it is for others. You know, I think my parents did a pretty good job in this respect. Not that they were perfect or that I have the most incredible relationship with them, right, you know, at this point in my life or anything. But I think they did a good job in teaching at least me, their children in general, but at least a couple of us, how to be healthy in this term, how to be happy, right? They gave us some skills. And I think generally, just naturally, I'm not that much of a, you know, uptight guy in a lot of these respects, you know. So I think my biological set point is further along on the charts than some people, right? But this is far, far harder for some people than it is for others. And for some people, it's not just a matter of listening to some dude on Sundays and then, you know, putting this into practice a little bit at a time. You know, some people reach a crisis point. And some people, there are medical things wrong with you, and there are things that you need actual, real professional help with. Right? Get that help. Right, I want to say that as clearly as possible. Get that help. If I get the flu, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to the doctor. You know, if your brain is sick, go to the doctor. Right? And your primary care physician can help, you know, refer you to somebody, you know, to the different, you know, therapists and that sort of thing that we have around here. And take it seriously, and even if it's not going to professional, be with people who are healthy and be able to talk about it and be open and vulnerable about it, right? You know, if I'm having trouble losing weight, I'll talk to somebody like Alan who's lost a whole bunch of weight and get some tips, right? You know, one thing that's not cool about our social networks is if your biological set point's pretty low and you're struggling, what you don't want to do is go spend a bunch of time with someone else who's also struggling, right? And sometimes that may work, but a lot of times you just end up pulling each other down even farther, right? Your flywheels are both turning in this same direction, and you end up even lower down, right? Or this is the number to the crisis hotline here locally. You know, if you struggle with thoughts of self-harm or suicide or anything like that, or you're at this, you know, real crisis point where your well-being or homicidal thoughts or anything like that, you reach a point where you need help, don't hesitate, all right? There should be zero stigma for any of this, right? Part of the reason it's such a problem is we've made it seem like there's something wrong with you. There's this shame associated with you if you're not happy all the time, right? And our Western society has done that. You put this shame and this stigma if you have emotional difficulties. And does that help? What does that cause?
Worse.
It makes it worse and worse and worse. And that's the last thing that we need in this world. Think about the state of the world around us. All you got, yeah. I don't want to kill. I would reprint some of the news this morning, but no, not even. And the people around us who are struggling, the de-evolution of our culture. You know what we need? Bono said, "Joy is an act of defiance." You know, this neuroscientist was in the military, and he said, I guess they were at a hospital overseas somewhere, and said they started coming under this mortar bombardment. So they're taking cover, and there's just mortar rounds landing everywhere, just noise and concussion and shrapnel everywhere, just constant noise. And so of course, in that state, how would you feel? What is your emotions in that time? Fear, incredible fear, and rightly so. That's an appropriate emotion for that circumstance. But he said, you know, everyone was cowering in this fear. He said one of the nurses started singing a song. Started singing, you know, a hymn. And he said, soon enough, everyone joined in. And we ended up all singing and it's laughing. All these mortar rounds were falling all around us. And he made the point, said, the bombs won't always stop falling. This is not what I'm talking about. It's not hiding your head in the sand and pretending like nothing bad is ever going to happen or that nothing bad ever does happen. The bombs aren't always going to start falling. But you can always choose to sink. And that's what we want to be trained to do. To be able to sing in the midst of the bombs. To be able to defy this world of violence and fear and anger. To defy the fear of this world with our joy. Galatians 5 says, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law." All right, kids, as we close, anybody have a drawing they want to share? We think about things that are good and lovely and true and worthy. Huh?
B's got one.
B? Come on, B. Bring them up here, everybody. You know something beautiful? Explain what's going on here, B. Can everybody see this? Tell me what's going on. That's a beautiful drawing. Wait a minute. Here, B.
It's supposed to be food and good things like flowers and I wasn't finished with it.
What else was you going to put?
I wanted to put other people on there, but
other people? What other people?
Like people to play with and
people that you play with and your family. That are very beautiful and good and true things. What do you have, Kaya?
Cupcake and me.
Cupcake and me. Awesome. It brings me joy too. Cupcakes bring me joy. Good job, girls. Who else? Who else has got one? You don't have to speak into that. Let's give them a hand. Who else has a drawing? Something amazing and joyful. Trace, what do you got, buddy? Huh? Do I want to know?
Oh,
yeah. Chase makes his own comic strips. It makes him very joyful. It makes me joyful, too. What you got, Emerson? Animals? What kind of animals? Let me see. Cats and dogs. Cats and dogs bring joy. Whose is this? Emerson. Oh, wow. And a giraffe and fish, cats, puppies. That's awesome. Is this mommy here?
Bigfoot.
Bigfoot does bring me joy, too. Good job, Emerson. What do you have, Ellie? Oh, my. What do we got here?
This is me. This is my mom. This is my dad. This is the giant candy cane.
Oh.
And this is my car. And this is the sun
in
the sky.
That's awesome. Will you say that one more time? Okay. What brings Ellie joy? Come here and speak into this microphone. What is on this picture again?
It's me, my mom, and my dad, in a giant candy cane, and my car, and the sky, and the sun.
That's very joyful. Did y'all hear that? Ellie got Ellie, her mom, her dad, a giant candy cane, her car, the sun, and the sky. Great job. Who else? Is that it? Come on, Joby.
Huh? Must include in to
Grace,
we're talking about the big blanket and
gray. Oh, okay.
Have drawing sleeping bags.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Anybody else? Micah, you got something? Okay. Tic-tac-toe brings joy. Simon drew a BB gun. Awesome. Jovi, what you got?
Yeah,
you can lay right here. Let me see. There we go. Oh, wow. Got a fisherman fishing and a grizzly bear with a cool trout in his mouth. Awesome, buddy. Good job. Yay. All right. So this week, think about... Let's read it again. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable. Let's stand up and read this together as we close. Let this be our benediction. Be full of joy always because you belong to the Lord. Again, I say, be full of joy. And now, dear brothers and sisters, one final thing. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise.